Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by SuperValu Insurance, looking out for you and yours with our new life and mortgage protection insurance.
Tweet at Miriam O'Call.
Earlier this year, I spoke to Irish Times columnist and former Sydney Rose, Brianna Parkins, as she was leaving Ireland to head back home to Australia, Irish partner in tow. Brianna has continued to write her Saturday magazine column for the Irish Times magazine, and she's still fiercely interested in what's going on here. Brianna Parkins, good morning to you, or good evening, Australian time.
Good evening for me and good morning for you.
So look, paint a picture for me now, where you're living, what you're looking out at. Tell me where you are.
So we are lucky enough to live on the water, which comes with upsides and downsides. The upside is the lovely view and the sunsets. The downside is the party boats, which are sort of, you know, you might get one for your Christmas party at work. You might get one with friends to rent on your birthday. But we do have a particularly loud party boat. And unfortunately, it's a hen's party boat. And the entertainment on board are gorgeous looking men who don't wear many clothes. And they do dance routines and they take off all their bits. So we do hear the odd cheering and whooping and whistling from really exuberant hen's parties going past. So you might catch a bit of that in the background.
All good. But look, it's Sydney, of course. What's the weather like here? Brianna, just to say, we've had a good few days of heavy rain, strong winds, floods, power outages. Is it sunny in Sydney?
I hate to say it, but it really is. Oh. I think this weekend has been the real start to summer. And really, summer runs from about, I would say, November until about March, until Easter, really. Easter is always sort of the first weekend of cooler weather. So we do get a really long, hot, beautiful summer. It's heading into the high 20s, you know, touching the 30-degree mark, and it's just been really gorgeous. The beaches are packed. The smell of sunscreen is everywhere. I really hate to say it, but it's gorgeous out here.
Very like here, Brianna. Look, give us the updates now. When you left here in the summer, where did you go to and how easy was it to find, first of all, somewhere to live for you both? And I'm interested, how do rental prices compare even with here?
Yeah, so it's quite a good comparison market from Sydney to Dublin because they're both quite expensive centres. I mean, Sydney is not the capital of Australia, it's Canberra, but really it's where the majority of the population is. It's the biggest and busiest city. So it's kind of a good benchmark compared to Dublin, which is the biggest and busiest city and the most expensive rental market in Ireland. And we actually found it to be a little bit cheaper. Some people say it's a little bit more expensive. The thing I will say is the availability of stock is just so much higher. I mean, we found it really easy to find a place, touch wood. That isn't always everyone's experience, but we just timed it at a really good point when we sort of came in the middle of winter when a lot of the international students had already found accommodation, other domestic students had already bedded in. So we just timed it really, really well. And it's also the quality of the stock available. So, you know, when you do rent a house, they've got beautiful built-in storage wardrobes, you've got heating and cooling, air conditioning, all that jazz, and it's to a really high spec. So even if you are paying around the same amount, what you're getting for that price is a lot better value, I think.
That's really interesting here. Now, tell me about the transition. Was it easy for you or were there changes in Sydney that you hadn't anticipated?
I was just talking about this to a friend and who'd also just moved back from Ireland, a fellow Australian, and we were just talking about that we're having to learn to be Australian again. There's a real cultural difference. And I think we did get a bit of reverse culture shock. My partner has settled in fine. He loves it. It's all new and novel to him. But it's almost like I've had to go back and relearn what it means to be Australian, particularly in the workplace and dealing with, you know, sort of professional world. Australians are quite abrupt and upfront. So I remember getting my first few emails and being like, oh my God, everyone hates me. They're so rude. And like, oh no, it's just how Australians are. They just, there's no, you know, hi, how are you? How was your weekend? Oh, would you mind just getting me? No. It's, do you have this? And when can I get it? And they're not being rude. They just want to know for their own job function. So it's been a bit of a rough, I think, transition in the beginning. Because I became more Irish than I thought. But we're getting there.
I love to hear that about your partner, James. But of course, he's mad into the GAA. So how does he keep up with his favourite sport?
He sets, well, for him, it's Premier League, GAA and rugby. So he's a full-on tragic in every sense of Irish sport. But he's managing to keep up just fine. He gets up at bizarre times of night to watch Premier League matches. Sydney GAA is quite a really intense scene. And, you know, I know people who they played county in Ireland and who said that they played some of the best GAA they've ever played in Australia because they're playing on teams with people they never would have played on, say that, you know, they might be facing against someone from a different county who might be like, you know, a second division, might never have been amazing to get up there. But now they're all mixed together in Australia. So, you know, it's not uncommon to face off against county players here. A lot of them out here for work. So the standard of the GAA here is quite high and it's a really proud community. So, yeah, I think it's the off season at the minute. So he's really excited and looking forward to joining that.
Are you living close to your mum and dad? And look, when we spoke before, we spoke about how they often feature in your columns and remind people they're a great mix of dub and working class Aussie, aren't they?
Yeah, my mum is also working class dub. So her family's from the Liberties and Summerhill, respectively. So, yeah, they kind of are on the same kind of class level, the same sort of values. But it's just so amusing watching those two people get by together. But, yeah, they're great. They're really happy to have me home. They just tried to foist off like a dodgy Christmas tree on me yesterday because we've come home mm-hmm. and we're trying to furnish an apartment. So that's been their code for getting rid of all the old shite they had in the shed. So every time they come and visit, I think they're trying to visit me because they miss me, but really it's an excuse to foist off or fob off something dodgy and broken of their own onto me. So that's where we're at the moment with them is saying no to hand-me-downs.
But looking at the papers, interestingly, here this morning, it's all about our election, the weather, the Conor McGregor verdict, the response to Nikita Hann's testimony. So what's in your papers today, like in the Sydney papers? What was there today?
So we did, like, it was interesting because I was following, obviously, Conor McGregor closely. I'd been following it, you know, from, we had, you know, years of kind of speculation and we couldn't report because of the reporting guidelines around sexual consult complaints in Ireland. And to see that kind of unfold in Australia, there was sort of a little bit of interest, but we've also been rocked to the core with probably one of the most powerful men in Australia, Alan Jones. He was a shock jock, a broadcaster, definitely a power broker. Prime ministers would be in fear of him. Mm. All the allegations about sort of sexual inappropriateness towards young male staffers have been building for years, and finally the police have taken action. So that's kind of dominated our headlines. But it's been interesting. It's sort of been a year of reckoning for Australia, but a very similar case where it was not criminally prosecuted, it became a civil defamation case run by a staffer who was accused of raping a woman named Brittany Higgins in our Parliament House. She was also a fellow staffer. That trial, the criminal trial, was a mistrial, but he tried to take papers for defamation, and on the balance of probabilities, he was found that he probably raped Miss Higgins. So it's been a really interesting year, both in Australia and Ireland, to see civil actions get up around the issues of rape rather than criminal actions. It's been a real sort of, you know, reckoning around what the DPP does and doesn't prosecute and how these two things differ.
Interesting. It's the same in both countries. It's just similar stories.
Yeah, there's been, I really do think there was a great column today in the Sydney Morning Herald about, you know, maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, these complaints would not have been aired publicly or taken seriously, or journalists would have been maybe dissuaded from investigating them or reporting on them, or victims would have been sort of cautioned off making complaints against powerful men. And those covers are slipping away. There's something that is changing and fundamentally, and I think it's for the better that, you know, there isn't powers and money is not the cover it used to be.
Now, your column yesterday in the Irish Times was related to our election, not party political, but I think your point strongly was about the diaspora and their right to a vote. You really think Irish people abroad should have a ballot, don't you, Brianna?
I strongly believe that they should exercise the same right I did as an Australian, which is I could vote up to 6 years after I left my home country. And I always voted in Australian elections. I didn't vote in Irish elections because I felt, you know, having two votes in two democracies was maybe taking two bites at the apple. So I retained my Australian vote. And really, I felt that was so important around the referendum recently on Indigenous rights in Parliament. And I was so glad I retained my vote because I, you know, really wanted to vote on this, what I felt like momentous sort of life-changing, you know, something I could tell my grandkids, you know, I voted a particular way. So that was really important to me. And I just thought Irish people don't have those rights. And the people that leave Ireland, I don't buy into the fact that people come to Australia in particular for the lifestyle. People leave Ireland because they don't think there's a better option in staying. They feel like they can't get ahead. You know, I'm part of the diaspora here. I talk to Irish people every weekend when I'm out with them, and they just didn't feel like they could have stayed in Ireland. So I feel like if you're discounting a lot of dissatisfied people, you know, people who are unhappy with the way the country's being run, I just don't think that's a fair democracy. I don't think that's giving every Irish citizen a voice. So for me, for the people who are so unhappy with how things are being run to not have a voice in how things are going to go in the future, I just think that's just not good enough.
And what about the argument, Brianna, I suppose, that the longer emigrants are away, the less likely they are to keep in touch, I suppose, with the nuances of life here, and the less likely maybe they are to adapt their political thinking.
And this is the fear. And there is a well-founded fear, because Ireland is different to Australia in that there are a lot of Irish passport holders and citizens who don't live in Ireland. A lot of them have never lived in Ireland because of the way citizenship works. And, you know, in that same fear of, you know, people who lived out of Ireland maybe 10, 20 years, they don't feel the same way. They're not involved in the day-to-day. They shouldn't have a say. But that's when you put in the checks and balances that Australia, America, and other democracies do, where you're like, okay, you can vote, but you have to have lived in Ireland for a certain amount of time and only for a certain amount of time after you've left. So I think there are ways to negate that with simple bureaucracy. I just don't buy that we can't do it full stop, end of. I think it's a very, just inability to see innovation.
And you mentioned there that, you know, you meet a lot of the diaspora weekends and stuff, but I was wondering, what elements from your time living here do you wish you could bring to life in Australia? Or is it that you now do hang out with so many Irish that you've all the support and community you could possibly need?
I mean, I always was part of the Irish community in Australia. I think, you know, it's an odd one when you sort of have an immigrant parent, right? So yeah. I always feel more Irish in Australia, and I feel Australian in Ireland. You always feel that's one part of you missing. And then being part of the Sydney Rose community, obviously lots of us in that. But yeah, there is something about us. I think we do death really well. When someone dies, the Irish tend to look after each other. And in a way, I was very grateful that when my nephew died, I was in Ireland, because I was just sort of cocooned and wrapped up. I think Australians don't do death very well. They sort of shy away from it. They see it as catching. They shrink away. We're also not very good at like the plumos small talk edge of life. Like, it's so interesting. I've become much more Irish in how I approach people and how I deal with people in the workplace and in my personal life. I think Ireland made me a much kinder, softer person, and I think it did change me for the better. I will always try and seek out that human element. I'm really invested in how people are doing and, you know, how I can kind of connect with them. Whereas, you know, before I came, I was very black and white and up and down and, you know, what I think was borderline rude sometimes. But Ireland knocked that out of me pretty quick.
That's so interesting, Brianna. I mean, do you honestly think we are a warmer, friendlier type of people? I mean, is it that just, you were saying earlier about, you know, the emails you get in Australia, people aren't rude, but they're just very blunt and matter of fact. But are we actually, do you think, as a nation, Irish people, are we warmer?
There's sort of two trains of thought about this, which is like, you were outwardly friendlier, but I think it's often harder to get to the centre of an Irish person. Like, it's much harder to infiltrate a friendship group. Like, people will be kind to you, but they might not necessarily invite you out and bring you in. It takes a while, I think, for Irish people to get used to you. And a lot of foreigners say it's hard to make friends, but I'm like, oh no, you just got to bide your time and work your way in slowly and win people trust over. But I think sometimes, yeah, there is sort of, there can be a little bit coldness in Ireland if someone doesn't know you or you didn't go to primary school people, or someone didn't know your parents, or you didn't, you know, you weren't part of the parish. It can take a while to sort of, for people to get used to and not call you a blow-in for sure. But I do think at the heart of it, I think Irish people have unparalleled people skills. But you have to also know when someone's just sort of trying to convince you to do something versus whether someone's actually wanting you to do that. There's a real difference between sometimes what people are saying and what they're meaning in Ireland, and that can be quite confusing. Whereas in Australia, people are saying what they're thinking, so it's simpler in other ways.
They're very direct. You just, yeah.
No, that's so direct.
Yeah. Listen, we spoke before, Brianna, about, you know, ADHD and minding your own mental health. And one of the most stressful things you can do in life, I assume, is pack a house and move to the other side of the world. I mean, how did you find that? And did you have moments where you did feel overwhelmed? And if so, how did you cope with that?
I live my life in constant overwhelm. Do you know what I mean? Like, I am always overwhelmed. And I think the thing with a lot of the people with ADHD, because it can vary, right? It's not a, people all don't have the same symptoms or the same experiences. It can be really different depending on the person. But I think so many of us live life like everything is on fire and everything's in chaos, that when big events happen, like moving overseas or unexpected stuff with a career or whatever, so everything goes wrong or everything's really stressful, we're actually really good at in the crisis. So I find really stressful situations not that stressful because I find a lot of things stressful. So I'm living in constant stress. So when the big thing happens, I'm like, oh, that's fine. I can deal with it. So for me, it wasn't too bad. I think it was more stressful for my partner, who's neurotypical.
That's, but he's loving it still now, isn't it? Now that he's there, he's loving it.
He has become so Australian. He's got like the football shorts on. He's growing a big mustache. He's got a mullet going. He wants to get more tattoos. He's really embracing the culture.
You mentioned before as well that the health system in Australia was another big plus for you going back for now. And has that proven to be true?
It was my main push and pull factor, to be honest. You know, I did get really sick recently, had to go to a doctor's, was sort of stressed out. It's like, oh, how am I going to find a GP who's going to take me on? And I, you know, from living in Ireland, just that little low level hum of like, I'm not going to get to see anyone for 2 weeks, maybe if I'm lucky. Got straight into a GP, had an hour long appointment with this amazing GP who like tested me for everything under the sun, sorted it out. I was on new medication, blood tests, all of the jobs. And at the end of the appointment, they're like, oh, I'm so sorry. So in Australia, there's a thing called a bulk billing practice. So you pay zero, like you're going to have to pay a gap. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be paying hundreds. No, it was $30. So like 20 euro. And they were apologizing profusely for an hour long appointment and like all these tests. And I was sorted and on my way to getting better really quickly. And it was just like, that would have taken probably a month, maybe 2 months in Ireland.
That's incredible.
So yeah, you just, it's, you know, I give out about the health system, but it's also time. It's days of your life spent waiting for tests, waiting for appointments, not being able to enjoy life. I feel like I've gotten so much of my life back. Like that's a month I got back that I might not have had in Ireland. So it just, it's great, but then it makes me really sad and frustrated for people in Ireland who don't have the same access to the resources.
Now, as I let you go, what about Christmas? It's coming fast. I assume when you stay in Australia, will your partner, Jane, stay there? How are you going to celebrate the day?
Yeah, so he's having this is his second Australian Christmas. We've done one before, but he can't get his head around that it is Christmas. Like, he's no presents ordered, nothing organised. He's like, I just keep forgetting. I'm like, I know, you have to associate hot with Christmas, which is really bizarre for him. He couldn't get over the fact we were, you know, my nephew, you know, we're talking about Santa. Santa's still a big thing in my nephew's life. And we were talking about the fact that Santa's sleigh gets pulled by kangaroos in Australia, which is something that my boyfriend just could not. His head melted. I'm like, what do you mean? I'm like, yeah, how would they get reindeer here? It's too hot for them. So there's been some real different understandings of what Christmas means. But Christmas for us will be spent in the pool, you know, eating seafood and drinking beers in the pool, playing with children.
Brianna, I have to say that I'm very jealous. But look, have a brilliant time. It's lovely to catch up with you again. And our listeners can continue to enjoy your weekly column in the Irish Times on Saturdays. Thanks a million, Brianna, for chatting to me this morning.
Always lovely. Always a pleasure.
Bye. Mind yourself. Sloan.
Tweet at Miriam O'Call.
Lovely reaction to Brianna. I'll bring you one. I was so happy Brianna kept up her Irish Times column. Her insights on Irish and Australian society are brilliant. Witty, observant, intelligent. Keep it up.